Today's podcast is brought to you by GP Box. If you don't know what GP Box is, it's basically Amazon for motorsport fanatics. So it's got a whole bunch of different suppliers on there, a whole bunch of different creators, anything you could possibly think of in terms of F1 fan gear, merchandise, memorabilia, it's all on there. It's fantastic. If you want to go there and check it out, please do. It's thegpbox.com. That's thegpbox.com. And use code GP247 to get 5% off at checkout.
Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One. Thank you for listening to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and as always, I'm joined by Ben Stevens, the editor of the Grand Prix 24/7 website. Today, we're going to have a brief chat about the upcoming race at Portimão, the first Portuguese Grand Prix since 1996. Ben, how much are you looking forward to the return of Formula One this weekend?
Oh, I'm very excited. I think not just for Portugal, but for all of us. It's been, week without F1 is always a tough week. So yeah, it's definitely good to have it back. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it fares at this, at least for F1, brand new track.
I think that the addition of some new tracks has added a real layer of intrigue so far this season.
I think that we've got to see drivers tackle different challenges that they're not used to, adapt to new circuits that they don't have so much data on. And I just think it's added a nice layer, even though obviously when you look at the championship, it looks like potentially another predictable season with Mercedes dominating at the front. I'll also be really excited to see Antonio Felix da Costa having a run around there in front of some of his home fans, and that'll be an exciting addition to the race. But Ben, first of all, in terms of your kind of impressions of Portimão as a circuit, are you expecting to see good racing there? Do you think that with the current cars and all the issues that we know that they have in terms of following and overtaking, do you think that this will facilitate some good racing?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one to predict. And as I should reveal, Will and I were just talking off air before we started about this, about the track's characteristics. And just looking at it, there's definitely a very strong Barcelona Circuit de Catalunya vibe coming from it. But I think that the main change and where there's legitimate reason to hope that it won't be as boring as Barcelona is that instead of having that final chicane just before the main straight, which you do in Barcelona, which kind of kills any following, you've got a sort of, nice flowing corner that hopefully allows cars to get close enough to sort of, try something down to turn one. And if that's the case, I think, there's absolutely hope that we could see some good racing.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, even talking about circuit to Barcelona Catalunya, there are some good aspects to that track as well, and it looks like this has some of those too. So in terms of the incredibly long back straight, and then the first sector at Barcelona I like as well. So I don't think there's any reason this won't be a good track for racing. And that last turn is quite a fast corner going into a very long straight. That could give cars really an opportunity to get up close behind and with the DRS kind of drag past. So I think that it'll be similar to Mugello in that sense, where you have this one long straight where you get a chance to outdrag the car in front of you. The rest of the lap will be about staying close, trying to force an error, trying to ensure that you can be in that DRS window. So then when it comes down to that long straight, you can kind of drag past with the DRS. So yeah, I have no real worries about the circuit. I think that, as I've said a number of times on this podcast, I think the fundamental issues with Formula One are restricted to the cars and the aerodynamics rather than the circuits. And I do think even races like Abu Dhabi and Russia, which we often criticise, can produce good racing in the right conditions. But Ben, I think before we kind of move on, we should have a quick look at the championship, because I think that, given the relentless nature of this season up until this point, it's been difficult to have an in-depth look at it. So obviously out front we do have Lewis Hamilton leading Valtteri Bottas by a pretty sizable margin. I think it's about 69 points after his win and Bottas's unfortunate DNF in the Nürburgring. So do you think it's safe to say at this point, with six races remaining, that Hamilton's got this title number seven sewn up?
I think saying anything other than that would be just being needlessly obtuse. Lewis is, he's got this in the bag. It's done, it's dusted. I think we already knew that probably after the first three races of the season, but by now it's pretty much confirmed.
I think that obviously you have the two kind of no points finishes for Bottas at Silverstone and at the Nürburgring, and they were both certainly unfortunate. And, you know, without them, you can see him being a bit closer, you know, rather than 60 points, it'd be more like 40 points. And he's definitely been consistent this season, more consistent, I think, than probably any other season. But, yeah, I don't think that he's ever shown the speed to overturn that deficit. And, you know, I do think 69 points is a bit harsh on Bottas, but overall I think that no one can be on any illusions that he's been second best this season. But I think the real interest comes when you look further down the standings, both in the constructor standings and the driver standings. So in fourth place, we've got Daniel Ricciardo on 78 points, with Sergio Perez 68, Lando Norris 65, Alex Albon 64, Charles Leclerc 63, and Lance Stroll 57. So that battle for fourth place in the driver standings, and that is incredibly close, and that transfers quite nicely to the constructors' title, where we have Racing Point, McLaren and Renault really battling for that third place, with Racing Point on 120 points, McLaren on 116 and Renault on 114, with of course Racing Point still facing that 15 point penalty for their brake ducts issue that they had earlier in the season. Ferrari actually quite far adrift now on 80, so it looks like it will be sixth place for Ferrari. So Ben, how do you kind of read this battle? Obviously Ricciardo and Renault look like the kind of form horse at the moment, but do you see McLaren or Racing Point being able to kind of come back at them at Portugal and for the rest of the season?
Well, honestly, I have no idea, and I think that's a very good thing. I think it's a testament to how close they are in terms of both the cars they've put out this season, at least at this point in the season, and the drivers driving them for the most part, that both these Drivers' Championship and Constructors' Championship battles are as close as they are. It could literally come down to, you know, one race, if we have another Mugello where there's just some sort of freak result, even if it's not a win, you know, it could be, you know, a podium for, let's say another podium for Lance Stroll, you know, whoever. Like, it's going to be, either way, it's going to be incredibly close. You know, one safety car at the right time or the wrong time, one mistake, you know, here or there could decide it. And, you know, on the surface, it's very hard to separate things. I think if I had to commit to a sort of a pecking order, at least in terms of the cars, I do think Renault does seem to hold the upper advantage right now, just in terms of overall pace, at least in Daniel Ricciardo's hands, to be fair. Maybe that's the driver making a difference. Racing Point, though, is like very, very close. And then there seems to be a small gap, a very small gap, which could change from weekend to weekend, with, I think, McLaren is sort of the third fastest of that trio right now.
Yeah, I think there was this point of divergence between McLaren and Renault, where Renault just seemed to suddenly get an understanding of their car. They saw that this low downforce setup was working slightly better. And since they kind of came to that realisation, I think it was after Spain, moving into Belgium, they've been on a brilliant run of results, kind of in the top six at every Grand Prix. Whereas McLaren, they had obviously the brilliant result with Sainz coming second at Monza, and it just seems that, and Sainz referenced this after the race last weekend, that their new update just hasn't quite worked, and he didn't seem quite comfortable. I think Norris was running very well at the Nürburgring, but it would have been interesting to see how he would have been able to kind of maintain that speed going through the rest of the race. Obviously McLaren, I think one thing that we've seen so far this season is that it's very good on low fuel at the end of races, so maybe Norris would have still been in contention for a podium. But listening to Sainz after the race, he did not seem at all happy with the new updates and how they'd kind of impacted the car. So it's a really fascinating battle. And as much as, you know, the drivers want to be as high up in the standings as possible, you know, Daniel Ricciardo, I think he cares more about potentially like picking up another podium than he would the difference between coming fifth and fourth in the standings. But when it comes to the constructors, that's completely different. You know, the difference in money between coming fifth and third for Renault is massive. And, you know, that's such a... whichever one of those teams to come third would be such a huge achievement, given, you know, the kind of oligopoly that Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari have had in recent years. So I think that the fact that it could come down to just a couple of points between the constructors is fascinating. And the fact that actually Racing Point looked like that penalty they picked up early in the season could really harm them in terms of securing that third place. So I just think it's a fascinating battle, and it could have some big kind of ramifications going into next season, because, you know, the financial gain that the team that comes third, and just the prestige of being like the third best team in Formula One is absolutely huge. So I'm really happy for all three of those teams to have the opportunity to achieve that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll just say before I agree with you more is if you've got a oligopoly on your GP247 podcast bingo card, well done. I don't think many would have had that. So good job having it in there, and good job by Will for you bringing that in.
I don't know if it was actually used in the right way, but...
Yeah, neither do I, but that's sort of the beauty of big words like that. You sound really smart, and most people aren't smart enough to correct you, so we're just going to assume that, Will, you're just on another level. So good job by you, mate. But yeah, in terms of this battle, yeah, it's very exciting. And as I said, I think it could be one freak result that, you know, swings it one way or the other. And the money is really significant. I mean, all three of these teams, as much as Renault's this massive company, Racing Point's going to become Aston Martin this year, the serious money behind them. McLaren, you know, nothing to turn the nose up at. They might not be on the same level financially, but they're still very, you know, large company. Yeah, as you said, like that money does make a difference to teams of this particular size. They sort of maybe don't need to necessarily show year on year that they're turning, you know, a significant profit, but it definitely does help. They have stakeholders and shareholders and investors that they answer to. And if they can show, you know, an extra, I don't know what the difference is, might be 4 million, might be 10 million. That matters to them, absolutely.
I think it also matters for just the kind of the sporting aspect of Formula One. You look at the constructors this season, and seven of them, the top seven, have all had a podium. And I just think that's really great, because, you know, there's one thing pouring all this money and knowing that you're probably not going to win the championship or you're not going to win a race. But I just think it's nice to know that, you know, now it's obviously there's huge amounts of luck involved, but the idea that you can come seventh in the constructor standings, but AlphaTauri are still going to have a win. And I just think that that's a really nice thing to see. And I think that having that carrot that the teams can all aim for is really important. And it just adds to the kind of the competitive nature of Formula One. And it just makes it more appealing for people to enter. So, you know, you see Luca Di Meo sitting in the Renault garage last weekend, smiling, you know, as Ricciardo goes up on the podium. And that's great to see, because, you know, I think Renault, well, maybe Fernando Alonso doesn't quite accept this yet, but I think they accept that they're probably not going to be fighting for the championship next season. But, you know, considering at the start of the season, people were thinking that, you know, they could be sixth or seventh in the standings. And by the end, they could be sitting third, you know, with Fernando Alonso coming into the team next season and potentially pushing on to battle Red Bull, who are, you know, losing their Honda partnership. It's fantastic for the team. And same with McLaren and Racing Point, who have made some big strides in the last year or so. And yeah, there's plenty of reason to be excited, I think, for the competitiveness of Formula One. Unfortunately, we just have this issue with Mercedes being so far out ahead. But let's move on to this Grand Prix in particular. I think as we've never raced there before, it's difficult to tell kind of if there are any drivers who this will particularly suit. But who would your kind of focus be on? Who are the drivers you think that really need a result this weekend?
Well, I mean, the first person that I think would come to everyone's mind in terms of needing a result is definitely Alex Albon. I have no idea whether this track is going to suit his particular driving style or not, but just the fact that he needs it to basically save his Red Bull career. He needs some big results. And he's not only not delivering big results in the last two races or so, but he's actually making headlines for the wrong reasons. So, you know, if he can get a top five finish here, I think that would be something of a boon to him. I think Red Bull are looking for an excuse to keep him. So if he can give him one, that goes a long way for sure. Aside from the obvious, it'll be interesting to see Lance Stroll coming back after his illness. You know, that was a bit of a strange thing, the illness, but he's back, and he's actually fallen behind Sergio Perez in the standings now. So it'll be interesting to see him and sort of how he responds to that, because obviously he's the guy who's sticking around next year. As much as it was never really a choice between the two of them, I think he still should be looking to prove to everyone that he deserves that seat. You know, I'll be the one staying instead of Sergio. So I'll definitely be keeping my eyes on him. And my other driver is Sebastian Vettel. I just want to see that guy not have a miserable weekend for once. So fingers crossed he can get something going here at Portimao.
Yeah, I think that's three well-chosen drivers there, Ben. Firstly, with Albon, obviously, we've been saying it all season, all he needs to do is to be, you know, fourth on the road and be a bit closer to Max Verstappen in qualifying. And, you know, he's done that a couple of times, but it only seems when he can do that, when the midfield are slightly further back, rather than when he's able to kind of cut that deficit to about 2 or 3 tenths. You know, it's been consistently half a second all season. And to be honest, at this point, I've struggled to see that changing. Obviously, Red Bull car has some drivability issues, and obviously Max has had, you know, the pick of the parts when they do make the updates. But, you know, Albon still needs to do better. And unfortunately, I don't see that changing this weekend, because it's been such a consistent gap between the two drivers all season. It really will come down to, you know, how close, you know, the Renaults and the McLarens and the Racing Points are to the front runners, as to whether he qualifies fourth or whether he qualifies, you know, 10th, depending on that margin. Moving on to Lance Stroll, I think this has actually been a really good season for Stroll. And I know often people are saying, oh, you know, Sergio missed two races. But actually, if you look at Stroll's record, he actually had three DNFs, which were completely out of his control. So he had the issue in the first race in Austria. He then, you know, had, I think it was a puncture that sent him into the wall in a pretty scary incident in Mugello. And then he was punted off by Charles Leclerc in Russia. So, and then obviously his illness last weekend. So he's actually done a really consistent job, being in the points every race that he's finished. And that's with four races that he wasn't able to finish because of things completely out of his control. So I do think that he's been pretty solid this season, and unfortunate. I think that a lot of people within the team probably wanted him to beat Perez this season, just to kind of vindicate their decision to stick with him rather than Sergio. But yeah, it's a big weekend for him. That's three weekends in a row without a point. You know, regardless of whose fault that is, he'll be desperate to get back on the scoreboard. And with Vettel, I think it's a similar situation with Albon. You know, we've spoken about this millions of times. You know, is his head not right? Just he does not have the speed anymore. Is it just, you know, that situation that he's upset with Ferrari, and he obviously feels that, you know, Ferrari have massively favoured Leclerc. But it's been an absolutely dismal season for Sebastian Vettel. You know, 13th in the standings, and you know, if he doesn't, the thing is, in recent weeks, there's just been no evidence that he wants to turn it around. I think he's kind of happy just to, you know, pootle around outside the points and move on to Racing Point next season. I don't know if the guys at Racing Point are sweating over, you know, whether they're going to get the Sebastian Vettel of old or not. Yeah, but I'd like to see a bit more of him, just a bit of pride in his performance, because, you know, this is someone who I associate with being a brilliant competitor, someone who kind of was so, you know, even the guy who crashed into the side of Lewis Hamilton in Baku because he felt like he was brake tested, that kind of guy who just was win at all costs. And I just think it's a shame to see.
Yeah, where's the fire, sir? Fire up. Yeah, come on, lad.
That's what I want to see, a bit more fire from Vettel. But moving on, I think before we go, there's a couple of interesting discussions to have from some of the news pieces that we've seen this week. One of them being Mercedes team principal Toto Wolff saying that Formula One needs to do more to kind of tell the story of the hybrid era. I thought this was a really interesting quote, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. I know that there's increasing pressure on motorsport to kind of justify the kind of level of environmental impact it has. And obviously you see series like Formula E and Extreme E coming up, which are obviously looking to do motorsport in a more environmentally friendly way. And I do agree with him in the sense that, Formula One does use hybrid engines, and that's a technology that's used in a lot of road cars as well. But do you agree with him that I don't think there's enough done to kind of talk about the transferable aspects of this technology that are used to, one, make road cars more energy efficient and limit the environmental impact of the sport?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one, and we've been having this discussion now for 7 odd years, and it's not going away anytime soon either. He's definitely got a point in terms of the technology is amazing. I don't think you can get away from that. Same time, the first thing you can say is, well, it's easy for him to say that and talk it up because his team and his company is the one that has really mastered that. And if he was in, Mattia Binotto's shoes or Cyril Abiteboul's shoes, would he be so willing to talk up the strengths of the engine and what a marvel it is when it's cost them so much on track? So there's that aspect for one. The other thing as well is just, its value to the sport. And that's a very tricky one to sort of gauge because there's definitely, as much as it's as a lot of F1 fans, there's sort of, you just want the most sort of visceral, exciting engine possible. You want like a V10, a V8, something that's loud, noisy, simple. As much as you want that, there is value in having a engine that at least in theory is technologically relevant to the car companies behind the engines, what they want to do on the road. So I also get it from that angle. Having said that, we've just seen Honda leave this engine behind after their failed 5+ year experiments. So maybe that argument that, it does transfer to the road doesn't hold as much water as we once thought it did. There's a lot going on here, and it's very tricky. I think the idea that F1 engines are road relevant is unlikely to go away. I don't think it should go away because we want these car companies, and we want more car companies to be interested to go in. But you have to strike that balance where it's sustainable. It's not outrageously expensive. It's possible to develop in 2 or 3 years and get it right, and that's the thing. And we've seen, I think Ferrari, if you set it aside, Honda is probably a great example of this, where they've got it wrong, then they got it right, then they got it wrong again, and now they're trying to get back to square one basically and get it right for the second time, and that's not good for the sport. It's as simple as that. It doesn't matter whether it doesn't matter how green it is or how great it looks in terms of marketing material, but we're lacking teams that can challenge Mercedes, and that comes down in a fairly significant part to the lack of competitive engines from other manufacturers and other suppliers, I should say. So, I get what he's saying, but F1 still needs to pursue another direction. What quite that direction is, I'm sure there's a lot of talks going on behind the scenes. I know 2026 is the sort of the date that everyone's zeroing in on. I'd love that to be earlier. I think just for the health of the sport, both on and off track, the sooner we get in a new engine, the better. But I understand that comes with additional costs, so that sort of will shy people away from it. But the marketing of the engine doesn't quite outweigh the negatives of what it's sort of given us on track and affected with the manufacturers off.
I think that's really the key point. Had Formula One moved to these new turbo hybrid engines and kind of as a result become the most competitive, most exciting racing series in the world, then perhaps the way that they're viewed would be slightly more positive. Because I don't think the way that people view them is necessarily like, oh, this technology isn't awesome, or this technology isn't good for the environment, or isn't really road relevant and revolutionary. What people say is, oh, Mercedes have just got a massive advantage in the engine department, and therefore, you know, they've won X number of championships in a row and are still way out front at the front of the grid. So I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Just that the kind of way that Formula One has gone since adopting these new power units is going to kind of always dictate the narrative, because what people want to see first and foremost when they tune into Formula One is, you know, closely matched cars that can fight on track. And I think that the move to the turbo hybrid era has been associated with kind of like single team dominance. And, you know, it's not true to say that, you know, in the old era there was always, you know, some super competitive racing. You know, Sebastian Vettel won 13 he won 13 races in the 2013 season, about 9 in a row. He won every race from Spa onwards. So it's not like that necessarily always led to competitive racing. But then also people look back at 2008, 2007, 2009, 2010, 2012. You know, some of the best seasons in Formula One history. And you can see why, you know, that era is potentially looked back on more fondly than this. I think there are a couple of more interesting points in this, in that, you know, if Honda are going to take on this Honda engine, sorry, if Red Bull are going to take on this Honda engine from 2021 onwards, they've actually called for the potential freezing of engine development. Obviously, this is something that Ferrari are not happy about at all, because they have a way slower power unit than anyone else on the grid. But I do think that there's something to the idea of trying to kind of find some engine parity, because I do think that is the area that seems to be holding Formula One back more than anything else from being super competitive at the front. I'll be very interested to see how these kind of ongoing negotiations play out, and also the discussions with regards to the 2026 engine formula. But it's a fascinating one. It's not something necessarily impacts the kind of day-to-day sport and, you know, the race by race, but it really is this kind of battle for the soul of Formula One. And obviously, as you said, Toto is probably going to have a slightly more rosy outlook on this era, because, you know, it's been an era of unprecedented success for the team that he's the team principal of. But it's an interesting one. I personally I'm really in favour of, you know, efforts from Formula One to become more environmentally friendly and, you know, to go carbon neutral by 2030. But I also understand that the enormous costs and manufacturing process that's involved in producing one of these power units is also, you know, wasteful. It's taking up a huge amount of time and resources. So there is definitely a balance to be struck, and I'll just be fascinated to see how this kind of continues to play out. But I think that's probably pretty much all we have time for this week. We'll be back after the Grand Prix on Sunday to review it and see who came out on top. But please do, in the meantime, visit our website, GrandPrix247.com. We'll have all the latest news and analysis of the Grand Prix weekend that is approaching. Also, if you want to get in touch with the show, please drop us an email at podcast@GrandPrix247.com. That's podcast@GrandPrix247.com. And you can also support our partners GP Box by heading to their website and using the code GP247 when making a purchase for 5% off.
Thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back on Sunday to review the Portuguese Grand Prix.